Thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for Spirit. The OU created Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, Spirit continues to be the ideal way for everyone to learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program will be A Life of Torah, a conversation with Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf. We are so excited by this interview, which will be conducted by Dovi Safir, an entrepreneur and investor who also enjoys researching unexplored chapters of Jewish history. He is the co-author of For the Record, a weekly history column in Mishpacha magazine. Dovi is a member of the board of directors of the Orthodox Union. He will be interviewing Rabbi Dr. Rakefet Rothkopf, noted scholar, author, and teacher, who needs no further introduction in our Spirit setting. So many of our Spirit friends were so thrilled to hear about this session that registration started coming in even before we announced it. Thank you, Dovi and Rabbi Rakefet, for taking your time to speak with us today. It is such a tremendous honor, privilege, and pleasure to turn the Spirit Forum over to Dovi Safir and Rabbi Dr. Rakefet Rothkopf.
Thank you, Rebbetzin. We're here with Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf, who I am proud to call Rebbe. And he's a Rebbe of thousands of Talmidim, really across the world, both who have listened to his shiurim in person and virtually. Two times a week, they tune in for his wonderful and insightful Torah content, Jewish history, and the occasional opinion on other topics. But I'm here to interview Rabbi Rakefet, and we've met several times in person, but this is the first time, I guess, I'm getting the chance, opportunity to do a formal interview with him. So how are you, Rabbi Rakefet?
As good as a Jew can be at this time, in this place, at this moment.
Same here, I guess. One of the people who have influenced me greatly on my journey to learn and study and Jewish history is one of the senior Rosh Yeshiva in America, Rabbi Yechiel Per. And he likes to say that it's important to study history and to teach history, but it's more important to make history. And you're somebody who has made history and continues to make history inside the classroom, outside of the classroom, with all of your tremendous accomplishments. And all of that started while you were just a young boy growing up in the Bronx, like 800,000 other Jews. And from that, you know, you really turned into one of the great Torah educators of our time. And perhaps you could start with just a little bit of a background and how all that began.
Well, tremendous hashkacha pratit. I'm a third-generation American. My grandparents came over about 120-plus years ago to the States, all four, not married. Vilna, Kovna, Slonim, Minsk, four different cities. And my parents were born in Harlem. They actually were neighbors in their youth. And it was the typical story. One set of grandparents, my father's parents, never were Mechalel Shabbos all the years in the States. My mother's parents, and it turns out I had great yichus on that side, and my grandfather, my Zayda, had learned in Voloshin, could quote Gemaras by heart, but America decimated them. The home was kosher, but there was not much more, and they had six children. Only my mother had real Jewish feeling. And I was started life in public school, the Bronx, one third Jewish, one third Catholic. I should say two thirds Catholic. Out of that, one half Irish, one half Italian. And in first grade, I was always getting into trouble with the teacher. And she sent for my mother time and again, and finally told my mother that, look, you have a son who has a Jewish head. He learns quickly. The rest of the kids, it takes them 1 week to learn what your son does in a day. He's bored here. And this teacher, who was Jewish, by the way, I have no idea if she had any, how observant she was. And she told my mother that five little blocks away from our house is the only so-called Jewish parochial school in the Bronx, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Salanta, which began in Harlem about 105 years ago and later moved to the Bronx. And my mother transferred me. She heard about a dual curriculum, better education. And second grade, I found myself in Yeshiva Salanta. Now, the teachers were not really Shomrei Torah. It was an interesting story. I write about it in Washington, and Rabbi Merilis of Chicago on his blog, Emet V'Amuna, confirmed that exactly what I described in New York was the same situation in Chicago. These were people who tried to sell insurance in America, didn't make it, but fell back upon knowledge of Hebrew, had once learned Gemara, and they were teaching us. They were Zionists, but I don't want to go any further. We could see a teacher riding on Shabbos. In seventh grade, a revolution happened. We had the two new teachers, Rabbis Yankelevich and Fishman, both Shanghai survivors, Mir, and neither spoke a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. And my seventh grade Rebbe was Reb Geshen Yankelevich. My eighth grade Rebbe was Chanuch Fishman. And all I can tell you is that, as you know from listening to my Shayirim, Yiddish is my native Torah language. And when you're introduced to Talmidim of Rav Reuven Levavitz, the Mira Mashkiach, it's overwhelming. I was a kid, but I was swept away. I'll tell one story about Rav Chanuch Fishman. He lived not far from me in the Bronx, a few blocks away, actually. I lived east, but he lived west. But the dividing line was basically Webster Avenue, which was two little blocks from my house. And I would be over his house Friday night for dessert. I became very friendly with his eldest son, Heshi, Zichrona Levracha. And the Rebbetzin would always save beautiful, wonderful, tasteful chocolate cake. And I always noticed that Rav Chanuch never finished the cake. He would always leave over a little piece. And I said, Rebbe, what does this mean that you, it's so sweet, it's azay good, it's so good, and you don't finish it. And Rav Chanuch told me, he's the Talmud of Rav Reuven. I mean, here's Rav Chanuch Fishman from Mir, from Europe, from Brisk, from Shanghai, talking to an American kid, 12 years, 13 years old. His mind is filled with DiMaggio and Henrik and Keller and the Yankee outfield and the pitches. Vic Rashi will mention, my favorite, look at his last name. And he's explaining to me that Rav Reuven Levavitz expected a Talmud of Musa to control his passion. And you had to leave over that last piece of cake to show that you are the master, not the desire. That was one influence, a great influence. Another influence in my life, by the time I was 11, exposed to such Rebbeim, I was a total Ben Torah, Libi Chashka B'Torah. And the only place in the Bronx outside of school where you had some Torah environment was B'nai Akiva. And I would imagine by 11, 12, I was already going to B'nai Akiva. We walked to, it was at the tip of Crotona Park, if you know the Bronx. It was at the tip of the East Bronx. Our postsake for B'nai Akiva was the great East Bronx postsake, Reb Moshe Bick, who I came to know very well. And I have to tell you, B'nai Akiva gave me a tremendous understanding of what life is about, Torah life, combining it with yeshiva education. And I would say from the age of 11, 12, only one concept motivated my life, Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. Well, the rest is commentary. To tell you all that I accomplished, I'd rather you'd Google me and read my seventh book, Washington. It's all in there. But to tell you very briefly, I went on, I studied at MTA. I studied with Baron Cutler in Lakewood for a period. I wanted to remain in Lakewood, but my parents wanted me to go to college. And I went to Yeshiva College. All right, Baruch Hashem, went on to get smicha, became very close to the Rav, Mori Urebi, who sits next to me in every shir I give until today. I don't open my mouth without thinking, what would Rebbe have to say about my learning, my thoughts, my insights, etc. I got 3 degrees from Bernard River Graduate School. And by the age of 23, you had smicha. I had already an MA, an MHL. I was working on my doctorate. Yeshiva, there were no kailalim then either. You knew how to learn or you'll never know how to learn. And they kicked you out. I went into the rabbinate with one desire, to turn every Jew in America into a Shomer Shabbos. I was in Lower Merion Synagogue for a year. I was the second rabbi there. And then Dr. Belkin appointed me to the yeshiva faculty as a Rebbe. And they had to find a shtala for me within commuting distance. And I'm proud to say I built the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. It continues until today. There's a mikveh today. There's an Erev. If anyone would have told me this when I began, I would have said impossible. And that's Maplewood Jewish Center, Beth Ephraim, at the tip of Maplewood, South Orange. It was an achievement. Then came the Six-Day War. Until then, Mori Urebi always would compliment me. You're a good Rebbe, you're a good teacher, you excite American kids when you're teaching a Taisvas. And I was quite happy in the rabbinate and Rosh Yeshiva in YU. The Six-Day War changed everything. And my wife simply said to me, "We're going, you can come." And Baruch Hashem, I went. We visited Israel for the first time in 68. It's all due to Mr. Gris. Our salaries increased by 50% due to Mr. Gris's generosity. I write about it in Washington, Joe Gris, Zichrono Levracha. And we used the money to go with the RCA, a summer trip to Israel. And we vowed we would settle within a year. 10 months later, we came back, Olim Chadashim. And coming to Israel, with, you know, living here, we soon will start our 53rd year. It'll be my 53rd Chodesh Tammuz al Admat HaKodesh. Coming to Israel, Ani Rothkopf, Aaron Rothkopf, became Aaron Rakefet. It's a totally different human being. If I had dedication in America, it went to the second power in Israel. Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Api Torah Yisrael. Here, very interestingly, again, the Hashgacha Pratit is overwhelming. I came with a contract to work as an editor in putting out the Encyclopedia Judaica. Judaica was first began on reparations money because Hitler stopped it. Originally, it was a German production. There were like 7 volumes and they were working on more in German, and it stopped with the Nazis, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram, and they gave Israeli government special funds to put out the encyclopedia. It was sold off to private hands, investors from Australia, and as long as it was a government project, it was a Chukum Hain, a Chukum Mag, and they, well, you know, we don't have to rush. When it became private and money, they wanted to get it out. And they will. And what attracted them to me is when I applied for Aliyah, they saw someone who has some knowledge of Torah and Jewish history and knows how to write, because I had a contract with Jewish Publication Society for my first book on Bernard Revel. And they interviewed me in America and gave me a contract. And I have to say, I worked there 2 years. I was very happy. I had no idea what money was in Israel. I accepted the contract they gave me. Within a month later, they ripped up the contract and gave me a substantial increase, which was all out of their goodwill. Nothing to do with me, because I didn't know the difference between a shekel to a lira to a dollar. But concomitantly, a miracle happened, and that was the Torah Culture Department of the Jewish Agency reached the conclusion that we have to export Torah from Jerusalem to the Anglo world. And in fall of 69, the first school organized for the purpose of exporting Torah, teaching in English, was BMT, Beit Medrash LaTorah. Rabbi Moshe Horowitz knew my brother. My brother did his, as an American citizen, he had either serve in the army or be a doctor in Walter Reed, which he was in Walter Reed, the Washington area. And he knew Rabbi Moshe from there, or Whitey as he was known universally, because they all belonged to the same shul in Silver Springs. Whitey was the principal and dean of the day school in the Washington area. So Whitey knew that my brother had a brother who had a doctorate in Jewish history, and he couldn't call me. I didn't have a phone. There were no phones yet in Israel, or very rare. I got a telegram that the Jewish agency wants to see me, and I remember meeting with Whitey on Rehov Malot in an apartment building that belonged to the Jewish agency, and he said to me, look, we're organizing this school. I don't only want to teach Gemara. I want to do other subjects. And I heard you have a doctorate in Jewish history. Maybe you can give a course that will liven up the students, he said. And as they say, the rest is history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we get to the rest, and I would say primarily your story at Gruss, where you've been for the last...
Put them on the map. Yeah, go ahead. Got them the campus.
So before we do that, I want to just go back to the 1950s, something you discussed very quickly. I don't know how well you recall 2 years ago the field trip that we took together, me, you, and your wife. And how it came about was I was listening to one of your classes one day, and you mentioned something about Lakewood, something about their schools there, maybe about kids going off the derech. And I was a little bit bothered by a certain stat you gave. I don't remember exactly what it was. And I emailed you and I said, next time you come to America, let's go to Lakewood. I don't know the last time you've been there was. I don't live there, but I go there from time to time. And let's go see, you know, what's going on there today. We took that field trip. We stopped on the way at the Mount Judah Cemetery because it was the Meitz Tehillah's yard site, right?
Right, absolutely.
Right, and we took that trip, and Rabbi Aaron Cutler hosted a luncheon for you, and they gave you a VIP tour of the yeshiva, and they opened up the rare sfarim for you and your wife, and it really was a wonderful day and experience.
It was a moment in time. And something happened that time that is what I call Gilui Eliyahu. In other words, there are a few times in your life when something happens that's overwhelming. If you recall, here I am sitting at the table with all the heads of Lakewood and Aaron Cutler and his helpers and assistants. And I imagine Aaron Cutler himself understood me well, of course, he has a certain broadness. But I imagine some of the other fellows were looking at me clean-shaven, dressed in a very westernized fashion, not wearing a uniform or what I call a portable ghetto, and a man who has two masters and a doctorate, etc. And yeah, I imagine they had a bit of a problem realizing why this person is familiar with Shas and Paiskim, Shelet and Shuvit. He's spoken in learning with Gedolei Yisrael, was Mater in Aguna, Rabbi Baji Yosef, etc. I don't have to go into details, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rav Henkin, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, the chief rabbis of Israel, every last one since the time I came in Aleph from Ram Unterman until today. So we mentioned, they started asking me about what I did in Russia. And, you know, I have to admit that really is a moment in time in your life when the Mossad called me. And now, thank God, I can talk about it. The security clause is lifted. And I mentioned how we got there, my wife and I. Again, you can read all the details either in Washington or in a book came out by the Mossad in Hebrew, Benetiv Hadmama, where you can read about Malka and Aaron Rakefet. And in the first home was the home of Aryeh Yovaisov, who later becomes Yovaisov later becomes Harav Katzin, Aryeh Katzin. And Aaron Cutler, who's sitting next to me, oh, Rabbi Katzin, I've worked with him. Let's call him. And, you know, Rabbi Katzin, a long beard and the uniform and all the good he did in America. And they reach Rabbi Katzin. Where is he? In Kiev, in the Ukraine, if you recall. He has a whole group of Russian kids from America who are second-generation Russian, and he's taking them on tour of their youth, and then they end off at the Kotel, and Aaron Cutler says, Rav Katzin, I have someone here who claims you know him. And he says to Katzin, Harav, he says, Mishpachat Rakefet, and Aryeh Katzin in Kiev starts yelling and screaming, Harav Rakefet, Harav Rakefet. And these people are about to faint listening. And he says, he introduced me to Gemara. Remember, he taught me. He inspired me. Everything I became. And that was a moment in time in Lakewood. By the way, the statistic you mentioned is not my statistic. I was referring to an article that appeared in the Israeli newspapers, in the religious press, about the problem of kids going off the derech. So one of the places they mentioned was Lakewood, their problem. And later I read something about Satmar, and we have the same problem in Israel, both in the Tzioni Dati world, the religious Zionist world, and in the Aguda world.
And you like to discuss your students who range anywhere from left-wing university professors who are secular to Samar Hasidim. And I became acquainted by another friend with a chassid of Sanz Kloisenberg, who is a close student of yours. And I asked him, I said, I'm going to be speaking to Rabbi Rakefet. Do you have any questions? So he sent me the following voice note. I think you could hear it, but it's an interesting what if, and I'll let you answer it.
Yes, hi. I would like if you can please ask him if it ever crossed his mind that he ever had charutet for leaving Lakewood so early, being now that he knows that Rabbanu passed away in Toshi Yaakov Gimel and the roof still went on strongly for so many years later, that he should have stayed longer, a little bit longer, like a year or two longer in Lakewood, and then go to YU to the roof, and he would be koina. He wouldn't lose so much from the roof, but then and being still being koina from Rabban, another year or two of Torah.
Well, that question I answer in Washington, I think I just alluded to it. If I had my way, I would have never left Lakewood. Libi Choshka B'Torah, I was very good. Yeah, Rabbi Yankel Shif, you have any idea what I'm talking about? And also, Lakewood at that time was not Lakewood of today. You had the Talmidim of Kletsk, who Reb Aaron was not just their Rebbe, was their father. It bound me together with Eastern Europe, with what was before the Holocaust. It was a fabulous experience.
And when we went back to Lakewood 2 years ago, you know, what did you sense about the yeshiva now thousands and thousands of Talmidim versus the yeshiva you attended with, 100 or 200?
Well, today it's like Mir. I always describe Mir as a tremendous umbrella. It's not focused on any one individual, although Rav Arieli, his Sheirim or Chabura get the greatest amount of students. If there's any dominant figure, it's probably Rav Arieli. But it's an umbrella. When I went to Lakewood, Lakewood centered around Rav Aaron Cutler. his two shiurim a week, everything was the Rosh Hashir. You got to remember, there were only a little over 100 students, Europeisha, Americanisha, everything was in Yiddish. You got to remember that Rav Aaron felt that the only way to teach Torah is to teach in Yiddish. He made that point of view both as the Agudas Rabbanim and both in the very early years of Torah and Mesorah. It was a totally different environment. Today, I would say Lakewood is a conglomeration of many chaburat and perhaps you would say various types of yeshivat. In Lakewood today, it's not that everyone thinks alike or thinks the same way. It's a very broad spectrum. Some of the people went to college before Lakewood, some will go after Lakewood. In my time, that basically didn't exist. Once you got into Lakewood, the only case I know of, I'll tell you an interesting case, there was a YU fellow, his last name was Deer. I don't remember his first name. He was slightly older than I am. And this is a true story. And he had finished 3 years of Yeshiva College. So he was learning with us in Lakewood, and we were really into it and happy. And he went to Rav Aaron. He didn't want to go back to college for the fourth year. He wanted to remain in Lakewood. And Rav Aaron told him, "Mit ein Jahr kein Rata v'ndraya." Do you understand what that means? That if you just stay in YU another year, your first 3 years, you'll have a degree, you'll have something worthwhile. It'll make the first 3 years meaningful. But if you don't get the degree, then you really wasted 3 years. But that was my take on Lakewood. I was very impressed with the library, with the Kitve Yad. Some of the people in Lakewood, the people working around the library, showed me articles they wrote later, sent to me. I said, well, now I can understand why the graduate schools don't have students. Today, you can master the ability to issue a text, to issue letters, to do background letters that you find from Gedolei Yisrael, footnotes that illuminate. It's as good as Bernard Revel Graduate School, as good as Hebrew U, as good as Bar Ilan. And by the way, the same thing is happening in Israel. The departments of Judaic studies in the university are hunting for students, advertising for students. Why? Because many of the yeshiva today, the Hesdi yeshiva, the more traditional yeshiva, you have students who come out of it the equal of any scientifically trained scholar. You see the Sfarim they put out, edited editions of the Maram Mirottenberg that came out of, if I'm not mistaken, Alon Shfut, an edited edition of the Sfat Emet. You know what I mean by edited? They call it a critical edition with footnotes and cross-references and explaining difficult words. I remember in graduate school we had the word Marufia in the Tshuvat of the Maram Mirottenberg. An entire year could be devoted to trying to figure out what Marufia means. Sofa Shel Davar, they reached the conclusion it means a monopoly, a monopoly of writ, monopoly. But it's very fascinating what has happened that from learning Torah and looking at some of the edited works that Mossad Rav Kook puts out, other institutions in Israel, we've raised an entire generation of top-rate Talmidei Chachamim, and some of them with a real scholarly finesse. Now, in my days in Lakewood, that almost didn't exist. There was one exception. He might have been a Shanghai survivor who put out Rishonim in a semi-edited edition. I remember he lived in Brooklyn and he supported himself. I remember going to his house to buy, I believe it was a Meiri that he put out. But there was a Rabbi Bloch. There were a few. But today already you have more, and they appreciate this type of knowledge, this type of approach as well. So it was, listen, to say Lakewood and see a Torah town. But then I have to tell you, on a personal level, it hurts. Why does it hurt? We need Torah Jews so desperately in Israel. The more, the better. Israel is a democracy. Everyone here votes. Your vote is your bullet. Your ballot is your bullet. the state today is caught in a tremendous quagmire. You have no idea how deep this chasm is. And wow, if we could have half of Lakewood here, half of Woodmere, half of Lawrence, half of Beverly Hills, I think Mashiach would be here. Let me also include, one second, half of Crown Heights. Let's not leave out Crown Heights and Borough Park.
So okay. You're saying half. So is Aliyah for everyone? Is it an option for everyone? Should everyone run an Aliyah? Or is it something that...
Tell me, are you a Meragil or are you a Torah Jew? If a Jew's obligated to live in Israel, of course everyone can make it. I came here to... Who would ever dream if someone would have told me, Ani, you're going to do basic training at the age of 38 and be the Chayal Mitztayim. What, are you crazy? Ani, you're going to serve in the army, Miluim, lecturing 15 years. I would have said, you're nuts. Ani, the Mossad is going to contact you and your wife. You're going to work in communist Russia for 10 years, risking your life and health, but you're going to accomplish. I would have said, what, are you crazy? Anyone can make it here. You have to just have the, you got to be with it and understand you don't conquer overnight. Lech lecha meyatzecha mimolad lecha mibeit avicha. The order is wrong. When you leave America, you leave moladatcha last, not first. You fly out of America. First, you leave your father's house. But it's very simple. To leave America is not the end of the world. To leave New York State, just now I spoke about New Jersey, Maplewood, South Orange, the finest community in the world when I lived there, and even today, it was just a double murder in Columbia High School. My wife picked it up in the New York Times online. We couldn't believe our eyes. They said, there's never a murder in South Orange, Maplewood. Kids were killed in the high school, Columbia High School. So, all right, to leave New Jersey, New York, not the end of the world, but to leave Beit Avicha, your shul, your mikveh, your Lashon Hara group, your Kiddush group, your whiskey on Shabbos morning, what do I call it, the Kiddush club, that's odd. But Baruch Hashem, we came. Believe me, it was so much harder 52, 53 years ago. There was no Anglo community here. It was swim or sink. Today, you come to Israel, you take Beit Shemesh to have a terrible problem. Kids go to elementary school, kids go to high school. They don't speak Hebrew. Their teachers are Anglos. The kids are Anglos. The parents are Anglos. Every last store is an Anglo. Every meet in the street is an Anglo. The Israelis have to break their teeth to respond to you in English. By the way, I have a principle to Israelis. I only speak Hebrew. And afal pi she'shomim et hamiftah shel, even if they hear my American accent, which is kivin yalal, you, that's my native language, I do not change. I remain in Hebrew. And I had an incident a few months ago. Again, you know, Derech Hevron, Yerushalayim, right near the Tayelet, they built a tremendous building, Beit HaNetziv. And many offices there, many of my students, Ari Teitelbaum, iWorld, my nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, his dentist office, another Talmud down the hall, Dr. Levine's office. And I had to go into the water company and I wanted directions. I had to leave a letter with them. So I come in, the water company, and there's the guard there, and he shala twaifoni samim et mataifa bishvil gichon. Where do I leave the envelope for gichon? It's the water company. And he says, ani lo medaber anglit. I don't speak English. And he, ani medaber elecha biyivrit. The poor guy heard my accent, my Hebrew, turned into English in his mind. But look.
Yeah. All right. Let's because we don't have that much time, let's move on. And I think that the best thing we could do is, lightning round type of questions. The Rav is something that I'd like to discuss, but you've got plenty of writings on the Rav, and we'll get there though. So, well, let's try and if we could keep these answers to 30 seconds to a minute, if possible, so we could move along, and that will keep things interesting.
Dovi, you know, when I open my mouth, it's 1 hour and 40 minutes, basic class, then the Narishkeit, okay? But I'll try.
Okay. So you wrote the definitive book on the American rabbinate. It's hard to argue with that, the Silver Era. In fact, somebody who is a colleague of mine told me that the Novominsk Rebbe, who just passed away recently, told him that if you're going to read one book on American Orthodoxy, that's the book. And the Novominsk Rebbe was an educated fellow. You know, he was a college-educated Rebbe, and he liked to read, and he said that's the book. So I think that everyone is in agreement that the Silver Era is the definitive book on the American rabbinic scene. So who was on your Mount Rushmore of the American rabbinate in the interwar period?
Well, you're talking about the interbellum period between World War I.
So the early, the Eastern European rabbis that kind of, you know, the glory of the American rabbinate, which probably occurred right until 1950. So let's say interwar and a little bit later. Who is your Mount Rushmore of American rabbis?
There's no question that Reb Lazer Silva was head and shoulders above the crowd. Here's a man who comes over, an immigrant, goes into the insurance business, and his family pleads with him, go into the rabbinate, the insurance business is not for you. This is 1906, 1907. He winds up in Harrisburg to Springfield to Cincinnati. And the chief rabbi of the United States and Canada, the famous story with the taxi driver, which, by the way, happens to be true, that the cab was speeding to the airport and the driver says, "Officer, I have the chief rabbi of the United States sitting in back." And Reb Lazer perks up and says, "And Canada." So he was in a class of himself. The closest to him is Rav Pinchas Teitz. Rav Pinchas Teitz built the day school.
I would say that's a bit later, though. That then you're already talking about the
1930, 1940, 1950.
Rabbi Teitz's dominance was probably the 40s and 50s. So you have, you know, the earlier, the important rabbi, Rosenberg and Ramaz.
Ramaz, again, you're talking someone who was a wonderful rabbi, loved by his congregants, but limited influence. In other words, he was first in Boston and then came to New York to Hillel Yeshurun. And Hillel Yeshurun, of course, he became world famous, not world famous, but famous within the immigrant community. Interestingly enough, his first assistant English-speaking rabbi was Mordechai Kaplan, as you know. And that's an interesting chapter in Torah history in the United States. Mordechai Kaplan, who he was, where he came from, and what became of him. I would mention that second. The third one, who they called the most Americanized of the European rabbis, was Rav Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal. He was rabbi in Philadelphia, and he ruled Philadelphia. He owned Philadelphia. There were other rabbanim there, but everyone had to look up to Rav Leventhal. Rav Leventhal plays a big role in the history of Yeshiva University because basically he selected the first two presidents who set YU on course. The first president, of course, was Reb Dov Revel. Rabbi Revel came to America, later went to Philadelphia, lived in Rabbi Leventhal's house, assisted him, got his master's, his doctorate. Later, Rav Shmuel Belkin, who married Rav Leventhal's granddaughter. So Rabbi Leventhal plays a big role in the yeshiva history. When outside of these few names, there were rabbanim on the local scene, Rabbi Yisrael Rosenberg, his rabbinate was very limited. His real influence was the Agudas Rabbanim. He was a good organizer, a good administrator. You say a good rabbanim, or I just said it. In addition, you should know he was president of yeshiva and what becomes Yeshiva College. When Rabbi Revel went back in the early 20s to help his family in the oil business, they were under a terrific competition from Esso Standard Oil. Rabbi Rosenberg headed up the yeshiva during that period. But again, his shtelas were very minor. It was the Agudas HaRabbanim where he played a role. Rabbi Levendahl, his shtela already was Philadelphia, and the Agudas HaRabbanim was important, but minor compared to the shtela. There was a Rabbi Seltzer who was the executive secretary of the Agudas HaRabbanim, but these people, they had little shuls secondary. A great Rav who was a great tzaddik was Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. He was a posek. He ran as Ras Teira. I don't know if he actually had a shul where he was officially the rabbi, but he was a tzaddik and a lamdin.
But it leads me to my point, which is commonly spoken about, which is that in the 1950s, the Rosh Yeshiva kind of pushed out the Rabbanim, and they took over the scene. But if you look back, you go to say when the Rav started Maimonides, 1937, 1938, there were only two cities in America, Baltimore and New York, which had Jewish day schools. So while these Rabbanim did they wore high hats, and they did a good job, with political stuff perhaps, but they failed at probably their most important task, which was chinuch. And the case, you look at most of them, their children, definitely their grandchildren, kind of left the fold. And much of that was due to the fact that in their respective cities, they did not, they didn't build most of the Torah. And in the pre-war era, obviously Rabbi Teitz and Elizabeth is different. And the Rav in Boston and then later, Chicago had what's now Skokie is the Hebrew Theological College. But then did not, there was no elementary school, and they were losing people in droves. So when the Rosh Yeshiva came onto the scene, and by then, obviously there were more yeshivas, but they built more yeshivas, they were somewhat responsible for building up, the firm population in the country and maintaining it.
I think there's one basic understanding that we need. Before World War II, any Jew who emigrated to the United States emigrated knowing there was a good chance he'd be the last Torah Jew of his family. Everyone knew about America, ultimately intermarriage, assimilation. It didn't begin overnight. Because of Hitler, by the mid-30s, late-30s, and certainly after World War II, Jews came to America not because they wanted to come to America. Jews came to America because they wanted to escape Hitler. And they came determined that the world of the United States will not influence them. We are going to build the Alte Heim here. You can see this in Gershon Kranzler, George Kranzler's doctorate on Williamsburg, where he interviews people in Williamsburg, the case studies in back of the volume and the appendix, and you hear the way they speak. I was determined to raise my child the way I was raised in Hungary 40 years ago. And it was not only that they felt this way, they had people who could lead them. Rabbi Aaron Cutler already came, and America is no different. Reb Moshe Feinstein starts to play a role. He came in 1937, running away from Hitler, running away from communism. He starts to play a major role. You have Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, first in Toronto, then coming to New York, to Brooklyn, to Rav Adas, and then to Muncie. And I don't have to tell you who Reb Yaakov was. You have Reb Yitzchak Kuttner, who came a little bit earlier than the others and spoke, of course, a perfect English, comes and they organize a mesifter in Chaim Berlin. He becomes the head of the mesifter, and you all know the rest is history, what becomes of Chaim Berlin. And YU itself, the Lam Sharav, let's not forget where Reb Moshe Shatzkes comes to America, and Reb Moshe comes to YU. I mean, this is... I remember just looking at the Lam Sharav inspired me. I was like, ah, it's, I'm looking at great. And then later in life, when I learned who he was, who raised him, Reb Tzidkel Plaza, his stepfather, the Lamsha Rava. And by the way, I know his grandchildren, great-grandchildren, Kulam Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, some YU, some Lakewood, but some in Israel. An amazing story of one family that should be written. But you're absolutely right, the Rosh Yeshiva, but it's not just that the Rosh Yeshiva, they had an audience to speak to. You have to understand, before World War II, you had one Rebbe in America that had some little following, the Biyana Rebbe. He had already on the east side, there was a shtickle malchus, a bit of malchut, of Russian, but after World War II, Satmar, Kloisenberg, Lubavitch, it's overwhelming. What happens to Bavov in America, you have a rebirth that's indescribable. Is it really Hasidus of Poland? Absolutely not. Today, a Satmar is an American Satmar. He's influenced by the paganistic world. His values are influenced. But the basic, the hair of the mensch, the basic body, meaning, commitment, Weltanschauung, is Satmar, is Bavov, is Lubavitch.
Okay, so let's move on, and let's try and stick to 1 minute answers if we can, so we can get through a few questions in the next 10-15 minutes. So what do you think would surprise the Rav most about today's modern Orthodoxy?
When you mention modern Orthodox, you have to understand the Rav was not modern Orthodox. You know his famous criticism in his Hesped for Reb Chaim Heller of modern Orthodoxy, the Upper West Side. The Rav, and this is the absolute honest definition of the Rav, I've told it to many people in the Haredi world, and they jumped for joy. They said, you hit the nail on the head. I said, look, I knew the Rav intimately. The Rav was a Torah Jew in the Western world. And this was the Rav. You look at what happened. On one hand, I think the Rav would be very proud. He raised students who are world Talmid Chachamim, Goyne Yisrael, Reb Heschel Shachler, Reb Mordechai Willig, etc. I think he would be very proud. I think he would be very proud that his students went on Aliyah, endless graduates of the yeshiva, Musmachim of the yeshiva, are living here. And we've played a very, very big role in Chinuch. I don't have to go further than Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, who revolutionized to a certain degree the whole Torah, the whole Hesdi Yeshiva, Weltanschauung, that it's not enough to learn, you have to be a Gadol B'Teira. And Reb Aaron has had a big influence. As a result of Reb Aaron, they coined the new word in Hebrew, outsider. When Reb Aaron died, I see this word in Mariv and Yediyot. I don't know what is this word? And then I realized it's a transliteration, outsider, that Reb Aaron was an outsider. We're not raised in Israel. We didn't network here in Israel. And yet he had tremendous influence. I think the Rav would be very proud. On the other hand, there's no question that the modern Orthodoxy gave birth to Chovevei Torah. Recently, a woman was proclaimed the rabbi of a kahila here in Israel, and publicity all over the world that she is the rabbi. It's not Rakefet's concept that a big shul should have a rabbi, a male, and have a woman on staff to deal with spiritual problems of women, and men should not deal with women. Women will deal with women, etc. All right, called one a rabbinic advisor, one a spiritual advisor. But for a woman to be the rabbi, what do you do with Geirut? What do you do when you need a Beit Din, when you need the Eidut Lekiyum Dava, not Eidut Lebira Dava, etc., etc.? I am positive the Rav would be very, very unhappy that a graduate or someone who identifies with, and I think he's on the Board of Trustees of Chovevei Torah, when the Supreme Court recognized same-sex marriages, this rabbi made a shechiyanu b'fneyam v'eda. I think the Rebbe would decree to hear such a story about a so-called Orthodox rabbi. There's no question in my mind. The Rebbe was a gon, the Rebbe was a tzaddik, the Rebbe lived in the Western world. This is a fact. we all have to live willy-nilly in the Western world if we're going to succeed. This is Israel's greatest challenge, the Haredi world here. How do we come out of the ghetto and integrate in the world? And may I quote Aaron Rakefet to you? I've said, you've heard me say this more than once. How do we measure success? This year I had a student in the Kollel who wears a shtreimel and a bekasher on Shabbos. He's an enikel of the Satmar dynasty. And he's a YU person. A Lamdin, he's going into the Kollel Elyon next year, and he's going back and he says there are many people in Satmar who want to become more mainstream in the world, the Milut Eretz V'Kivshucha. And I said, you know, you have to help them. He said, that's my goal. He's getting a master's from Wurzweiler, social work. I said, but you know how you'll be successful? If that person integrates in the world, degrees, whatever he does, but he wears a shtreimel on Shabbos. I don't want you to tell me that he looks like Rakefet on Shabbos. And that's the story with the Gera Chassid, who just became an MD. It's a famous case in Israel. Graduated the Technion. Not an easy school. When you get a doctor, when you get an MD from the Technion, you are really a top grade MD. My grandson was in the same class with him. So at the graduation, the dean spoke and said, and I want to single out this young man who came from a Gera Hasidic background. We're very proud of you that you've achieved your MD with honors, but we're more proud that you remained the same Gera Hasid you came into the Technion. And this is the challenge today. This is the way your humble servant sees it. And it's in Israel today, headline news. If you know what went on yesterday and looked at the newspapers today, headline news, and this issue is part and parcel of all the headline news.
Okay, next question. This is a quick one. DiMaggio or Mantle?
Mantle, the guy would drink all night and then come in and hit two home runs. DiMaggio never touched liquor. The man watched himself, conducted himself in dignity. All right? True, his family life was nothing I would be proud of. It's not Stan usual that you can hold up in the Mrs. Schmuitz as an example. Stan the man, but a wife, young Donna, loyal to his wife, family man, loyal to St. Louis, etc. But one other thing about DiMaggio, he only trusted Jews. He was a Catholic, all his dearest friends, and he died in the arms of Moshe Engelberg, a yeshiva boy from Brooklyn who was DiMaggio's publicist, lawyer, accountant. Later, he runs all the money DiMaggio left. Everything was left in his hands, Moshe Engelberg. Let me just tell you a good, true story. I went to see him. Whatever the story is, not important now. Hollywood, Florida. And the heart specialist, who's a Shemesh Shabbos, took care of DiMaggio, told them, Morris, a great rabbi from Jerusalem, wants to see you. He grew up in the Bronx, a 20-minute walk from Yankee Stadium. So Morris, you know, he charges $500 a half minute in his office, but you can't say no to the heart specialist. So he saw me, and he went crazy with joy. He said, the rabbi knows baseball better than I do. And he went into the vault to give me the most expensive gift I ever got. My Talmidim in the Kollel priced it at $2,200, a portrait of DiMaggio signed with all types of legal papers, etc. While he went into the vault, I looked at all the certificates on the wall. Morris Engelberg, and he did this, and he did that, and he gave to this Catholic charity in memory of DiMaggio, gave DiMaggio's money here, there, everywhere. And right in the center, I see a Hebrew diploma. I take a look, an Eitz Chaim graduate. When he comes out of the vault, I say, Morris, Meishela, what happened to you, an Eitz Chaim graduate? And look where you are today, a conservative temple and nothing. He says, Rabbi, you asked a good question, and I'll give you the honest answer. All I remember of my elementary yeshiva is that the teachers beat me with a ruler. That's what I remember of my elementary yeshiva. Wow, is that a message for Chinuch? But I have to go a step further. 20 years later, we visited Morris again, the last time I was in America. My Talmud arranged it. Morris is older, I'm older, we're the same age. And I couldn't believe it. I come into his office. All he has piled up is Chabad literature. All he wants to talk about is the new Chabad shul he built in Hollywood, further out where there's no shul anywhere near there. And he's come back, belev v'nefesh, a shaluach of Chabad picked Morris up. When I come back, I told my Talmidim, anyone who says a bad word about Chabad, I'm going to punch him in the nose. I'm going to take out a ruler. What they accomplished, Baruch Hashem. But DiMaggio, from Tutz Shoah to Moshe Engelberg, DiMaggio only trusted Jews. Very fascinating.
Are the Yankees going to get back on track? Should they fire Aaron Boone? I
gave up my Bronx citizenship. I am so disappointed in the Yankees. You have no idea. Because, you know, every morning I go to the website. I have 5-6 minutes. I'm a kid again. But at least they won yesterday. I had nachat this morning. Baruch Hashem, Judge forced in a run. He walked with the bases loaded and then he field his choice and a run scored. He got 2 RBIs, didn't get a hit. It's unbelievable how they're hitting. Unbelievable. But what can I do? Eich naflu giborim. But in Torah, lehefech. Today we have wonderful talmidim, yireim v'shleimim, and talmidei chachamim. And I look at my own, Baruch Hashem, I have nachas. Can I end off with one story? What happened to me a few weeks ago? I had the schut, the first time ever, I rode on a trailer. A trailer attached to a tractor. How did it happen? Shechiyanu. I was Masada Kedushin for a grandson who married a girl who grew up and is a family chaverim in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. So they bring the kala to the chuppah in a tractor, all covered beautiful white satin and flowers, a sight to see. And I'm Masada Kedushin, and I speak, and the edim are chaverim of my grandson. Everyone from Eidot HaMizrach, the caller is Persian. She's my third Persian granddaughter-in-law. And I highly, highly recommend Persian girls. The Nachat is unbelievable. Yiret Shemayim and common sense. Ashreinu Shezachinu. But now, what can I do? Everyone and their Talmidei Chachamim. One of the Eidim was already a Rebbe in a Hesdi Yeshiva. The other one was an Avreich. And they love the Divrei Torah. And I said, well, I don't have a choice. I'm an Ashkenazi. My grandson, we have to make yichud, right? It's not like the Rambam, that tachat achuppah, that is sufficient. And halachat kamer in Israel, where they have the minig now, you put a talit on, make a shechiyanu, right? You give the chatan a talit, and he puts it on the collar as well. Oh my, that is poreish talito. But we need yichud to finish out. So in order to get to yichud, the chatan and kala are riding in the first seat in the tractor, and we're right in back, yours truly, with 2 edim, one a Yemenite, one a Moroccan, and the Ashkenazi in the middle. And they take us around the whole kibbutz, and everyone is singing and yelling Mazel Tov, and then we get to the Chedi Yechid. So I have do I make a Shechiyanu on riding on a tractor? Wow. Ashreinu Shezachinu to this.
The last 3 questions, and I guess they're just answers without commentary. What is it? You've traveled the worlds, giving talks and visiting communities. What is your favorite city to visit?
Favorite city? I would say Moscow. It brings back, we were back in Moscow a few years ago. They wanted to show us what became and what was and what is. Moscow is no different than New York, basically, as far as Yiddishkeit goes. All you need is money and you can produce honey. And then I would say Moscow is even better than New York because Putin loves Rabbi Lazar. And if you come into the shul, you know, one of the big donors of the big Chabad center is the President Putin. So Ashreinu Shezachinu, no question.
Next question is your wife Malka, like me, stams from Belze Chasidim. But if Aaron Rakefet was born into the world of Chassid, who would be your Rebbe?
I hold that Lubavitch made a mistake. Halavai, they would have pointed a new Rebbe. There were candidates. There's someone in Israel, Yitzhak Ginsburg. If you ever met Yitzhak Ginsburg, you think you're talking to Lubavitch Rebbe. He's a Baal Tshuva, an American. He's Bucky in Torah, Bucky in Hasidus, Bucky in psychology, Bucky in mathematics, Bucky in music. I never saw anyone like him. So people say, but he's not the Rebbe, but you make a bad mistake. In 1951, the Rebbe was not yet the Rebbe. It's like the Rav coming to the yeshiva in 41. He developed. He became the Rav. He became the Rebbe. You're a humble servant. I have to be honest. I always apologize to my students out of the late 50s, 60s, 70s. I said, I knew nothing then. What did I know? So one girl answered me. She said, Rebbe, you knew enough to inspire me to come in Aliyah. I said, I love that answer, but I don't know what I know today. And even today, how much do I know? Let me say Divrei Torah from the Rav. Why a Talmud Chacham? If you think you're a Chacham, you haven't achieved. You have to fulfill a Talmud wanting to become a Chacham. It's 8:48 in the morning now. I started learning at 4 a.m. this morning. I've already learned 4 Siddurim and Davin B'tzibor, which I always do, till I got to Gris and you got hold of me. So that's the way I would view that question. Who would be my Rebbe today? The Kalim Stalina. Okay? You read me.
Good answer. Okay. And the last one also, that if you had a year to sit and write one more book, well, who would it be? Who would you profile?
No, I'll tell you. I'm writing now, but I consider this my most important, because at my age, I only fear the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I'm writing on Das Teira, on Reb Chaim Moshe, on Shanghai, on Reb Pinchas Hirschsprung, on the State of Israel. I have it all outlined. A good deal of it. I already scribbled 100, almost 200 pages, because I write. I don't know how to use a computer. It's a different world. I have to write the way I grew up.
You gotta check the Yankee scores, though. So.
No, the Yankees. That much they taught me to find the Yankee websites. Nishta Hechetera, but the Baruch Hashem. But that's what I'm writing right now. What lacks? You asked a very good question. I'll tell you where I suffer. No one has written on Rav Shmuel Belkin. The second president of YU deserves a full-length, sophisticated biography, like I was privileged to do on Rabbi Revel, someone has to do on Rabbi Belkin, and I've gotten nowhere. I've pleaded with people in Bernard Revel Graduate School. Today, no one knows who Dr. Belkin was. You have no idea. Forget about YU. You can write what he did. You don't like, do like Einstein, etc. You have to write, all right. This, but more than that, are you aware of the Gemilat Chesed? Do you know that why you organized the Kollel post-World War II for the survivors who hadn't yet found their place in America? And I can remember that Kollel yesterday. Rav Avigdor Zipperstein was the head of the Kollel. They sat in buildings that were constructed with government money on Amsterdam Avenue, World War II, for the veterans, that type of money available. Later, Bernard Revel Graduate School sat in those buildings. They're all knocked down today. And then, one by one, whoever Rav Shmuel Belkin could appoint to the yeshiva faculty, Uptown, Brooklyn, Rav Shmuel Fibrashevitz became a Rebbe in Brooklyn, an example. Some went into the rabbinate. Peretz Posen, Gedenksrep Peretz Posen, got a master's in chemistry. He went on to teach at Yeshiva College. But what chesed the man displayed, and he always was. I describe Rabbi Belkin. There was two Rabbi Belkins that lived with him simultaneously. The rotten yeshiva boy and the president of Yeshiva University. Can I end off with one story about Rav Shmuel Belkin? Okay. So there's a true story. I write this in Washington, but the Havayuv that happened to me. I get a note. I was a Rebbe in the Yeshiva already. Dr. Miss Davis comes up to see me, hands me a note that Dr. Belkin wants to see me. So I come out of the classroom. Dr. Belkin wants to see you. I said to the kids, all right, continue learning Chavruta, and I'll be back in a few minutes. I go downstairs. I was in room 212, if I'm not mistaken, 211. I go downstairs to Dr. Belkin's office, and Rav Shmuel says to me, I owe you a thanks. I look at him. He says, because of you, I didn't have to make an appeal yesterday. And then he told me the story. It was a parlor meeting for Yeshiva University on the Upper West Side. And, you know, the top balabatim come in. Rav Shmuel Belkin is going to speak. And Mrs. Manashevitz walks in, the widow of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Manashevitz, the son of Rav Binyamin, the founder of Manashevitz. And this is an elegant American lady born in Cincinnati, speaks the Queen's English, a tzaddikit in her personal life. And she comes over to Dr. Belkin in front of everyone. Everyone is silent. Mrs. Manashevitz has entered. And she says, Rabbi Belkin, I want you to know, when I wake up in the morning, I thank God twice. Once for giving me back my soul, and then for giving me Rabbi Rothkopf. And Rabbi Belkin looks at her and says, what do you mean? She says, my son, Anomenaf, my man, who's named after my husband, Tzvi Hirsch, who's Rabbi Rothkopf's student, and what he has done for him. He's no longer alive, Zichrona Levracha. Dr. Belkin said, I got up and I told the audience, Moriva Rabotai, I don't have to make an appeal this morning. Mrs. Manashevitz has just made the appeal. Give the yeshiva support and we will raise many Rabbi Rothkopfs. True story. Emmet Vyatsev.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Send regards home. A pleasure seeing you.
And I hope we see you soon.
Be'ezrat Hashem, we should...
Sooner rather than later.
Besora Tovat, Aleinu Van Kol Yisrael, and Chodesh Tov. We're already Erev Rosh Chodesh here. Everyone said Chodesh Tov as we left Shul this morning. Le'besora Tovat, Aleinu Van Kol Yisrael. Thank you very much.